And hello and welcome to a WLRN Miami Herald News special. I'm Phil Latzman. After the verdict is what we're calling it this morning, and we're going to hear from some criminal defense experts as well as you on the verdict that has all of South Florida and the country talking. George Zimmerman, of course, not guilty of murder in the second degree and of manslaughter in the trial that captivated us this summer. Here is some of the reaction after the verdict was announced on Saturday night outside the courtroom in Sanford.
State of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Verdict, we the jury find George Zimmerman not guilty.
They found him not guilty.
You got to change.
Why?
He killed a young 17-year-old. He didn't have to die like that. He killed them. He should just go to prison for life.
Well, I got Skittles, I got a tea, so everybody better watch out, because I'm coming. I got Skittles, I got a tea.
And there we heard the verdict being read by the clerk and then the reaction outside the courtroom on Saturday night following the verdict of not guilty in the George Zimmerman murder case. Of course, the reaction here in South Florida, it has been peaceful thus far. This is the home of Trayvon Martin, is a Miami Gardens teenager who went to high school at Dr. Michael Kropp High School. And Miami-Dade Police Sergeant Aida Fina Milian says her department has not seen any strong reaction to the verdict at this point.
We believe that what we have been advocating, which is to be vocal, not violent, has possibly been reaching all the community, and they've been heeding that suggestion, because as of yet, we haven't had to respond to any large gathering or protest.
And hopefully it stays that way. Joining us now from Sanford is Evan Benn, a Miami Herald reporter who's been part of the paper's team covering the trial. He joins us to talk about what it was like in the courtroom on Saturday night when the verdict was announced and his thoughts on covering the trial. Hi, Evan. So, what was it like in that courtroom when that verdict came down?
Well, Trayvon Martin's parents were not there, and the family attorney, Benjamin Crump, said that was on his advice. He told them it was going to be very emotional, whichever outcome it was. He told them to go home to Miami Gardens so they could attend church this morning. George Zimmerman's family was very much in the courtroom, both in the front of the court, in the back row behind the reporters, and they were very emotional, quiet, but openly weeping, hugging. George Zimmerman kind of lowered his shoulders as soon as the verdict was read, let out a brief smile. His attorneys were obviously very happy, and then we were all showed out of the courtroom pretty quickly after that.
And Evan, you had a chance to hear what the attorneys, both the defense attorneys and the prosecutors, had to say afterwards. And for those that may have gone to sleep and didn't hear all of that or haven't had a chance to read your accounts in the Miami Herald today, what did both sides say about the outcome?
Well, the prosecution tried to hold their head up as high as they could. They thought they fought a good battle, but the evidence just wasn't on their side. The defense was more exuberant, and in fact, co-counsel Don West said that he kind of took jabs at the prosecution. He said at times their case was disgraceful. Someone asked him about what he thought of the judge, Judge Deborah Nelson, who several times during the trial he sort of sparred with. And he deferred and said he didn't want to lose his bar license, so he wasn't going to talk about that. But lead counsel Mark O'Mara, George Zimmerman's main defense attorney, was obviously very pleased. He thought that even though the burden of proof was on the state to prove that George Zimmerman had committed an act of murder, Mark O'Mara has said from the beginning that he really felt like it was his case to prove George Zimmerman's innocence, and he thought that he obviously successfully did that.
What about the reaction? We heard some of it there at the top of the show from outside the courtroom, and there were a lot of supporters of Trayvon Martin, and this is where he is from here in Miami Gardens, and a lot of emotional reaction to that verdict. But to your knowledge, anything past that, any other problems that have been reported in Sanford or anywhere else in the aftermath of the verdict?
No problems. There have been some gatherings around the country. Oakland, California had a good-sized one last night. Chicago, D.C., Tallahassee had some students from FAMU and the area rally. But everything has pretty much been peaceful and without violence. I'm going to drive around Sanford today and see what's going on out there. Outside the courthouse, there weren't many demonstrators or protesters. In fact, there were none throughout the course of the trial. Once it went to jurors on Friday, a crowd of maybe 50 or so people gathered. They left, came back Saturday, and stayed there most of the day. And obviously the apex of that was immediately after the verdict was read. There was a lot of heated demonstration, chanting, which we heard on your show. But they all also filed out pretty soon, like I'd say around 11:30 last night. It was completely empty outside the Seminole County Courthouse.
What was this like as a reporter in your work, along with David Ovalle and Audra Birch, featured in the Miami Herald today? And you guys were there for weeks, I assume probably without much time off, and writing about something that you had no idea of the outcome and such a sensational trial. What was it like as a reporter, Evan, to cover all of this?
Well, it was gratifying. It was challenging. This is obviously an important case to South Florida, to Miami. Trayvon Martin was from Miami Gardens, went to Dr. Michael Kropp Senior High in North Miami-Dade. He was a local kid. So obviously we were going to be up here covering this trial from gavel to gavel to see what happened. And I'm happy we were able to do that and provide some coverage and insight for our readers.
Evan, Ben is the Miami Herald, one of the Miami Herald reporters, one of the team of reporters that has been covering the George Zimmerman trial. Of course, the verdict is not guilty. And Evan, nice enough to join us this morning after the verdict. Evan, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Phil.
All right. That's the Miami Herald's Evan Ben. Let's move on now to Jude Facciadomo, who is a criminal defense attorney, a former assistant public defender with the Miami-Dade Public Defender's Office, with some extensive jury trial experience, and he's currently the youngest president in the 50-year history of the Miami chapter of the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys. Jude, thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, Phil.
And your reaction as a criminal defense attorney, are you surprised at all that the verdict came back as not guilty?
No, I can't say that I am. Anytime you have a self-defense case, it really resonates with jurors. You're putting forth an argument that almost anybody can relate to, the feeling of wanting to protect oneself. It's a unique argument, whereas most times when you're arguing to a jury, you're saying something that's foreign to them, but self-defense is something that people can really associate with.
Is it that the prosecution failed to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt that George Zimmerman was the aggressor and caused the death of Trayvon Martin?
I believe so, and I think the jury verdict speaks to that. And that's a tall order to get to, especially with all the gray area and the speculation that was there. The prosecution had a really tough burden to overcome without much fact.
What about the stand your ground law? Did that play into this trial as much as we thought? And was it a factor in the decision that the jurors made? Because it certainly didn't seem like it was something that was featured by the defense as much as we thought it would be.
It's interesting you asked that question. I'm glad you did, because that's obviously come up over and over again throughout the case from the very beginning. And I think yesterday David Ovalle from the Herald, and I commend them for their great coverage, asked the state attorney a similar question, and the answer was very accurate. Stand your ground and self-defense, while similar, are procedurally very different. Stand your ground is something that would have been argued straight to the judge. It actually creates an immunity. It says, you know what? The state can't even bring these charges against you. You are immune from prosecution because the facts are so clear. In this instance, the defense team was arguing to a jury that Mr. Zimmerman was defending himself, and then that had to be overcome by reasonable doubt.
So do you feel that the law as applicable in Florida was applied in this case in the way that everybody expected? And let's say it wasn't Florida. Say it's New York, or say it's another state that perhaps doesn't have the same types of laws, gun laws or what have you. Do you think that jurors in a different place might have reached a different verdict? Or is this just an open and shut case no matter where you are?
I don't think you're going to get a different verdict. I mean, obviously, I'm not familiar with self-defense in all 50 states, but from what I do know, it's very similar. And what we had here was a straightforward self-defense argument to the jury. had the defense team decided to proceed with a stand your ground argument, the answer may be different depending on what the judge's ruling is, because that's what's different in Florida, is that procedural immunity to argue stand your ground before even going into a trial.
And Jude, do you think we're going to have more cases like this one, hopefully not resulting in the death of a teenage boy, no matter where he is, where he's from, or what he's done? This whole incident seemed like just a terrible coincidence of timing and everything that came together that made this the way it was and caused the death of Trayvon Martin. But do you feel that this is just the beginning, that we could have other incidents like this in Florida that might come up?
I certainly hope not. And I don't think so. I think, I think you put it quite perfectly, that this is kind of a perfect storm of race and gun rights and stand your ground law and self-defense kind of all swirling together into this maelstrom. And with the media coverage, it took on a life of its own. So hopefully we won't have to see much more of this.
Jude Facciodomo is a criminal defense attorney. He is the president of the Miami chapter of the Florida Association.
Immediate past president.
Go ahead to correct me there. Of the Miami chapter of the Florida Association of Criminal Defense Attorneys. Nice enough to join us this morning. Jude, thanks so much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Now, we're having a special program here on WLRN this morning in the aftermath of the verdict in the Zimmerman trial. It's after the verdict. It's a WLRN Miami Herald News special. I'm Phil Latzman. We are asking for your calls. We will get to you, and you can dial us up at 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and check in with our own Rick Stone, who is in Miami Gardens, and we'll also have a lot more as we continue our special hour in just a moment.
People can come here. They can buy anything they want, as far as the Haitian food, which is the best I can tell you, you know, in town. Very spicy, very tasty, very good. And the minute you step into Little Haiti, we don't have to tell you welcome, Little Haiti. The food, the smell of food, the flavor welcomes you to Little Haiti. You are listening to WLRN 91.3, and I'm Jean Mapou.
In our quickly changing world, one thing remains constant, the support of WLRN's members. We depend on that support to keep another constant, the quality of our programming. If you've received a membership reminder in the mail, please send your check or give online at WLRNradio.org today.
You haven't seen them for years. You've grown, you've changed, you're a different person now, though, right? Right? Then how come they still know you better than anyone else? On the next Snap Judgment, from PRX and NPR, Reunion. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
This morning at 11 here on WLRN.
Hi, welcome to a special edition of our programming here on WLRN After the Verdict. It is a WLRN Miami Herald News special. I'm Phil Latzman, and over the next hour we'll try to reach some conclusions as far as what's happened since the verdict last night. We'll hear from some more reporters. In fact, our own Rick Stone is standing by in Miami Gardens, I believe, at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, which is the church that is home to the Martin family. And I believe things are about to get started there. Rick, thanks for joining us this morning. What's the scene like in Miami Gardens there at that church?
Well, as you point out, Phil, Antioch Baptist is one of the traditional churches of the Martin family. And although there were no family members here for the first of three scheduled services this morning, we're sort of led to believe somebody may show up at 9 or 11 o'clock this morning. Church is crowded. The cars are just choking the neighborhood. There is a heavy but very restrained police presence here. Inside the church, people are clearly very hurt and dismayed by last night's verdict. But in his sermon, Pastor Arthur Jackson was urging them to keep their Christian perspective and to understand that there was, you know, justice will be coming. He's saying that God will accomplish what the prosecution could not.
Do you expect to see the Martin family? We heard from Evan Bend a few moments ago was that they were told not to be in the room for the verdict last night, that they were told to go back to Miami Gardens and appear at church this morning. So I guess there is an expectation that they will be there today.
That's a possibility. We're not sure what sort of guidance the family is under or who might be giving it right now. People associated with the church, some of the pastors and volunteers, are being kind of coy about whether or not we can expect to see Mrs. Fulton, Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon's mother, at either the 9 or the 11 o'clock service. But we will just stay here and see what develops.
And as you've been driving around Miami Gardens this morning, any evidence of, and you mentioned that things seem like they're peaceful, and you heard the pastor preaching for peace and nonviolence. Is there any evidence that has not been followed?
No, this is a very, very quiet, very peaceful Sunday morning here in Miami Gardens. It's very easy to see police cars rolling through intersections here and there, and there's quite a few of them parked here near the church, but there's really no sign of any sort of emotion that is so high it cannot be restrained.
All right, that's Rick Stone. He is in Miami Gardens this morning, and stay tuned as Rick will be doing some reporting, which we'll hear tomorrow and throughout the week on the reaction to this verdict from the hometown of Trayvon Martin. Rick Stone, thanks very much, Rick. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Phil.
All right. In just a moment, we're going to talk with a University of Miami law professor who's going to give us a little bit more insight on all of that as well, and on some of the law questions concerning this case. Though we have had some folks on the line. I did ask for some reaction here this morning from our listeners to WLRN, and we do have them, although I can't see who is that. Nancy, that's on line one. We're blocked. The screen's blocked out. There it is. Nancy, she is in Miami. Yes. Nancy, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Well, I say Florida Roundup. It's not the Florida Roundup. It's a special program, so excuse me for that, but welcome to our program. Good to have you.
Thank you. All I want to say is I'm just hoping that we can honor Trayvon's memory by joining the foundation that his parents have set up. I believe it's to help either change gun laws or to help change the Stand Your Ground law. I've just been amazed at the grace that his parents have shown, and I'm sure that Trayvon's very proud of them. And I have a son who is Trayvon's age. And that's really all I wanted to say.
Well, you said it eloquently, Nancy. Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Diana, who is in Dania Beach. Diana, welcome to our show.
Hi. How are you? I happen to like your show very much.
Thank you.
I listen to it all the time. Frankly, I'm really shocked because I thought he was going to get manslaughter. I mean, they're both sides were wrong. You know, there's not a right and a wrong. But I really thought that he was going to get manslaughter, that he deserved it because he did pursue it. And I think that nobody deserves to get shot like that the way he did, you know, Trayvon Martin. So I'm really surprised, you know, that the verdict was not guilty and that he just walked free. I'm kind of shocked about that.
Barb, you think that your shock is matched by other people in the community, in our South Florida community, the people that you've talked to that feel the same way as you do?
I haven't spoken to anybody, you know, this morning, but, you know, I'm sure that, you know, other people would maybe agree with that they thought that he would at least get manslaughter because he did pursue him. I mean, and he, you know, he did shoot him. He could have fought him. He could have punched him. He could have done something else, but he didn't, you know, and this gun control thing is really out of control. But I feel bad for his family, for Trayvon Martin's family. Because they shouldn't have lost their son that way.
Diana, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate
that. Thanks a lot.
That.
Have a great day.
All right. Let's move on to another expert. Tamara Lave is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Miami's School of Law. Her primary teaching areas include criminal law, criminal procedure, ethics, law, philosophy, and punishment. Professor Lave, thanks very much for your time this morning. So what did you think of what happened last night? Was it the way you expected it?
I'm not surprised by the verdict. I think that based on the evidence that was presented, the jurors made a good decision. I think that the problem had to do with the investigation initially, and I think that the prosecutor made a mistake by essentially allowing Zimmerman to testify through those videotapes without ever actually taking the stand.
And that obviously seems like a wise move on the defense's part. Didn't seem like there was any doubt that that they would not put him on the stand. If they had put him on the stand, do you think that would have made any difference?
Well, you know, I was actually a public defender for 10 years, so I have a lot of experience trying serious cases. And I think it would be very difficult to win a self-defense case without having the defendant testify if there's no eyewitnesses. I mean, think about what they would have had. The prosecutor would have put on the 911 tape, which would have put him there, which would have put him getting out of the car when the 911 dispatcher told him essentially not to. You know, I think that I don't really see how they would have put on the professor that would have talked about how he knew about the law and what, you know, what was allowed under Stand Your Ground. I think it would have been very difficult for the defense to proceed without Zimmerman testifying, without those videotapes. Because remember, their experts could then testify that the physical evidence was consistent with Zimmerman's account. Whereas if the prosecutor had not put on those videotapes, Zimmerman would have had to take the stand, tell what happened, and then the prosecutor would have had a fair game at him. Because remember, to get a jury instruction, there has to be evidence to support the jury instruction. Otherwise, the judge isn't going to give it. So when you give a jury instruction on self-defense, there's got to be evidence for it. And without Zimmerman's words, which came in through those videotapes, I don't see how the instruction would have been given.
And by the way,
let me just pause to say one thing.
Sure.
I think it's really dangerous always for lawyers to Monday morning quarterback other lawyers. Having tried cases, I mean, you are balancing lots of things, and so I'm sure the prosecutor had good reasons for making the decision that they did, the prosecutors, but I think that was, from my vantage point of having been a trial lawyer for a long time before I became a professor, I would not have made the same decision.
You're listening to After the Verdict. It's a WLRN Miami Herald News special early on this Sunday morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Phil Latzman. With us right now is Professor Tamara Lave from the University of Miami, a criminal defense law expert and professor. Professor Lave, if profiling was an issue, which it was admitted that he was profiled, then why wasn't the jury allowed to consider race, do you think?
I mean, I'm sorry, when you say why weren't they allowed to consider race, what exactly are you asking?
Well, they say that race was not an issue in this case, but profiling was. And I guess the question is, how could race be an issue but profiling not be? Or race not be an issue and profiling be an issue?
I mean, look, race was an issue in this case, whether or not it was said overtly or not. I'm sure during the voir dire, the jurors were specifically asked about it because you had a young black man who was killed by a person who was, you know, Latino. So when race is an issue, when I say voir dire, you ask the jurors about it directly, mm-hmm. because you want to make sure they can be fair and impartial. So whether or not you're specifically saying it's an issue or you're not acknowledging it's an issue, it was an issue in the case. I think that what the judge wants to make sure happens is the jurors don't make decision, don't come to a verdict based on considerations they're not supposed to have, considerations of race. But of course, race was playing a role in this case. I mean,
But how could they say? How could they say it didn't play a role? It's funny. I mean, how can you believe anyone who says that race did not play a role in this? And that seems still be the narrative. You're just saying that people are not being honest when it comes to that?
You know what? There's sort of overt racism, which of course we know what that is. And then, interestingly, there's a lot of research about implicit bias. And what that means is that people have views about race and views about people of color that they don't even know that they have. So, for instance, there was a study that some researchers did in which they had two actors. And all they did was change the race of the actors from black-black, white-black, black-white. And they had then... the subjects watch these two people doing the exact same thing. But remember, all they're doing is switching the race. And when the two people were engaging in something that could be called horseplay, and they were white, 90% of the people said it was horseplay. Hmm. When you switched the race and made the people black, like 90% of the people said it was aggressive behavior. It was the same exact behavior. Did those people think they were racist? Of course they didn't think they were racist. But the point is that we're affected by our culture, we're affected by television, we're affected by all these things around us, and they make us see the world in a certain way. And so I'm saying that, yes, race played a role. We can say that it didn't, but I think that's naive.
So another factor in this case, Professor Lay, was the fact that you had an all-woman jury, and you had a lot of people asking about that and how that may have played into the verdicts. Is that highly unusual that what we saw with an all-woman jury? And only one of them non-white?
Well, look, first of all, it was hard for them to find a jury here because it was such a, it was a case that had gotten so much attention in the news. And so, you know, because when you're choosing a jury, you have to make sure that people can be fair and impartial. And if they know too much and if they already have pre-existing opinions, then they shouldn't sit on the jury. So already it was going to be difficult to find a panel of jurors that could be fair and impartial. The fact they found six women, I mean, in California we have juries of 12, so I've never had a jury of six before. I've certainly never had an all-female jury before. And when you're choosing jurors, prosecutors and defense attorneys are looking for different kinds of things. And am I surprised it was an all-female jury? Yes, I mean, I suspect that the defense thought that, women would be more sympathetic to the fact that a young man was killed, a 17-year-old, that they would identify with him because perhaps they were mothers or grandmothers or sisters. And the defense probably thought that having an all-women jury, that women would, I'm stereotyping in this, but that's what we do with jury selection because mm-hmm. we don't get that much time to talk to the jurors, but perhaps the defense thought, well, if we have women, they will want to be protected, so they'll like the role of Zimmerman as stepping up and protecting his community. They may have also thought that women would be less comfortable being judgmental than men, and so that would make them more likely to hang instead of come to a verdict. Because you have to remember, for the defense, it's not just a not guilty that's a win, even though that's what they got here, but a hung verdict is a win as well. Mm-hmm. The hung verdict, of course, what that means is if they couldn't come to an agreement, that would be a win because it would mean the prosecutor would either dismiss the case or plea bargain it, and of course that's a good outcome.
And I have to ask you, because you also practice law in California, you teach law in California, you also are a lecturer at the University of California, Berkeley. Do you think that, and I asked this question of Jude Facciamondo before, who was a criminal defense attorney, I asked him, in other states, did he think that the verdict would come back from the jury the same way? What do you think? At a place like California, do you think that they reached the same verdict?
Well, you have to remember that Florida has stand your ground,
right?
Which, even though Zimmerman did not invoke stand your ground immunity before trial, stand your ground affected what the police did. Now, they may say it didn't, but stand your ground says that if you have probable cause to believe that somebody is acting in self-defense, you're not allowed to arrest him. The police did not arrest in this case. The police did not aggressively canvass or interview. And so that's the difference between California and Florida. In California, Zimmerman would have been arrested because we don't have stand your ground there. They would have been he would have been arrested, number one. And let me just say that, look, at trial, what matters is the jurors and the judge and all that kind of stuff, but also what matters is the evidence is presented before the court. And so if you have the police doing a less than ideal job at the investigation stage, these witnesses were cross-examined quite well by the defense. If the police had interviewed them immediately after the incident, they would have been locked in then with what they said. You wouldn't have had somebody going sideways on the stand who initially said it was Zimmerman on top and then changing his testimony to being Trayvon on top. So anyway, I think that the fact that there was stand your ground would have affected the difference between the investigation. And then second of all, California has a different burden of proof in a self-defense case than Florida does. So in Florida, once someone asserts self-defense, the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant did not use self-defense, whereas in California, the defendant has the burden to prove that he did use self-defense by preponderance of the evidence.
And Professor,
so I think it would have been e- so let me just say, so the answer to the question is, I think it would have been an easier case for the prosecution in California than in Florida.
And Professor, do you? I think it's important to note that this is the criminal trial is over, but there could be a civil case in a wrongful death lawsuit. Is that correct? That the Martin family could file against George Zimmerman, so he's not exactly off the hook, is he?
Well, I mean, now Zimmerman hasn't invoked stand your ground immunity yet, but now he can, and so and he would. I mean, he just got a not guilty verdict claiming self defense, so. I think that he would win under stand your ground immunity. It's just preponderance of the evidence, and stand your ground immunity means that he can't be sued civilly. So even though right now at this particular moment in time, hypothetically, he could be pursued civilly, in reality, that's not going to happen.
And do you think this case sets standards that we all heard during the jury about the precedents in this case versus this person from, you know, year and all the legalese that went along with it? But do you think that lawyers and attorneys will be and judges will be pointing to this case for years to come as an example of what could happen? And I'll ask the same question that I asked of our guest before, is do you think that these types of things will continue happening in Florida?
I mean, so understand, this is not going to be a case that sets precedent in the sense that it's going to be binding on other courts. It's not like a Supreme Court decision when the Supreme Court makes a finding, or a Florida Supreme Court decision makes a legal ruling that then affects an interpretation of the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or whatever else. But what this case is it's a case that shows what happens when the prosecutor tries to get a second-degree murder and then eventually a manslaughter verdict against a Latino man killing a young black man. And I think that what this case does is it tells us something about Florida juries, or at least Florida juries in Sanford, Florida. It tells us something about, you know, I mean... Prosecutors want to win cases. That's what their job is. And prosecutors don't like losing. And so if another case like this comes along, I think the effect of this case is going to be more likely to have a plea bargain, or maybe more likely not to file at all because the prosecutors don't want to lose. So I think that's the effect of it. Now, what effect does it have on the street? I mean, there have been two studies that have been done recently that showed that self-defense, that stand your ground law doesn't deter crime, and what it does is it increases the murder rate. And so I think what this case does is, and I say this with great sadness, I think that this sends a message to people that have guns to shoot first and think later, because they can look at George Zimmerman and say, well, we think that, you know, if we kill somebody and there's nobody else around, we're probably going to get away with it.
Tamara Lave is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Miami and at the University of California at Berkeley. Professor Lave, thanks so much for your time and your insights this morning.
Let me just correct you. I'm an Associate Professor of Law at the University of Miami. I'm a visiting scholar right now at Berkeley. I'm no longer a lecturer.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks for clarifying
that. I'm happy to be at Miami, but... Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
All right. Thanks. It's good to have you here in South Florida. All right. So we're going to take a break. We're also chasing Broward Sheriff Scott Israel and hoping that he might be able to join us to talk about the campaign that was underway in Broward, Raise Your Voice, Not Your Hands. And so far, as we've said at the top of the show, we've not heard of any incidents. And that's the good news through all this, is that things have remained peaceful. People have accepted the verdict. They're not happy about it. A lot of people down here and a lot of people outside the courtroom. But so far, things have been peaceful, and hopefully they will stay that way. When we come back, we're going to go to a colleague of Professor Rice's at Florida International University, a sociology professor, to talk about the potential reactions here in this community and elsewhere. It's a special program. We're back in just a moment here on WLRN.
WLRN and the South Florida Theater League invite you to get in bed with the arts by attending the Summer Theater Fest reading series. Monday, July 15th at 7:30 p.m., see Women Will Always Win by Marjorie O'Neill Butler and Roger Martin at the Actors Playhouse.
Support for 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM comes in part from Miami-Dade County Public Schools, helping to provide a public service for all of South Florida.
Hi, I'm Michael Stock. Every Sunday on Folk and Acoustic Music, I present the best in contemporary and traditional bluegrass, blues, folk music, plus interviews. This week with filmmakers James Reams. His new movie is about bluegrass. James Wallace. His movie is about the Philadelphia Folk Festival. And record producer Robert Neustadt. His new CD, Border Songs, is an effort to end death and suffering in the U.S.-Mexico borderlands. Folk and Acoustic Music, Sunday, starting at 2.
For things to do around town, artscalendar.com suggests see live art created and enjoy brunch specials at Art Serves Brunch on the Beach, Sundays through August 4th on Fort Lauderdale Beach, just north of A1A. Advance tickets are available now to Red Eye, the underground art event of the summer, featuring live music, indie films, fashion, food trucks, and a live graffiti challenge. And discover everything happening in Greater Fort Lauderdale at artscalendar.com, funded in part by the Broward Cultural Division.
And we welcome you back to After the Verdict, a WLRN Miami Herald News special. I'm Phil Latzman. We asked through our listeners last night after the verdict came in for their reactions, and here's what we received overnight.
My name is Rosetta King. I don't understand what the jury was thinking about. That young man was walking, going about his own business on his way home. George Zimmerman had to approach him, and I'm very, very shocked.
Gary Porter is my name. Not only did George Zimmerman have to fight the media, have to fight a judge who gave every conceivable angle to the state and their prosecution, have to fight Obama because Trayvon would have looked like one of Obama's kids, and justice is still done.
Yes, my name is Jeff Sanders. I live in the state of Florida. I'm deeply horrified. Not guilty, really? First of all, how could there not have been one African-American juror? I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but something totally went wrong, and someone needs to be held accountable.
There you have it. Some of the folks who phoned us after the verdict on our Google Voice number, which, by the way, if I have it correct, is 305-335-WLRN. Is that what that is? I believe that is the number, 305-335-WLRN. If I'm wrong, I will correct that. But off the top of my head, I believe that is the number you can call and leave us a Google Voice message. Also, for the next 15 minutes of this special program, we are continuing to hear from you on the phone if you would like to dial in and talk about anything you've heard in the past 45 minutes during the special program we've had here. It's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. And again, we do hope by the way, it's 305-330-9576. So I was wrong. Our Google Voice number, take two, 305-330-9576, which does spell out WLRN, 305-330-9576. We'll continue to get some of those emotional responses from you, and I'll be using them throughout the time on our during our broadcast, during our newscasts, and it's really the best way to get to us, 305-330-9576. And if you want to call us in the next 15 minutes, well, we have this special program on, 800-743-9576. Joining us now is Percy Hinson. Percy is at the Florida International University. He is a professor of sociology at FIU, and part of his job is to teach how culture and institutions permeate, define, produce, and fashion every aspect of reality. He's presented his research in over 100 papers at conferences and other forums. His areas of expertise include African studies, diaspora studies, political sociology and development, and comparative race and ethnicity. Professor Hinson, thanks very much for getting up early this morning with us. First question for you, the NAACP and other groups and individuals are calling for the Department of Justice to file a federal civil rights case. How would that work, and do you think that's possible?
Well, I think that, of course, it's possible. Everything is possible, but I think that it's not going to work. I think that, for all intents and purposes, you know, this case is settled, and hopefully what's going to happen now is that the United States and the Justice Department and the various states would begin to look at the racial fissures that permeate permeate not only the society, but also the criminal justice system and the presumptions of innocence that really apply differently to different racial groups, and to sort of begin to think through how the promise of equal justice could function in the realities of the criminal justice system. I think that's where the positive aspects of this verdict, given the fact that it was highly popularized, should proceed.
Professor Hitson, we just talked about this before, and I guess I'd get your thoughts on this. Is that the both sides say that this wasn't about race, or you know, it was about profiling, and the jury was saying this, it didn't consider it, or it hasn't said anything yet, but not to consider this trial or this judgment on race. How could they possibly do that when we've just talked about all these things that may have played into the verdict and what happened in this case?
Well, you know, I think it's an aspect of American society. You know, American society is permeated by race, and it's permeated by racial attitude. You know, it's founded on understandings of racial difference, and it is still fundamental to not only the life conditions of everyone, but the attitudes of everyone towards each other. And so it's become so normalized that it is rendered invisible. And even saying that it's about race, there's a tendency not even to recognize racial attitudes. But at the same time, you know, this case was all about race. And someone who is looking from the outside would know that immediately. But I think from the perspective of the narratives of the United States, the narratives of equal justice, the narratives of, you know, the innocent until proven guilty, the narratives of individualism and equality. You know, these narratives come up against the reality of race in the United States and the sort of foundational principles that produce fundamental racial differences, not only in the way people understand themselves and each other, but in the conditions of life of people. And I think this is the fundamental problem that the United States society has to face. And it was very, very evident in this case, and very evident in the unwillingness of many persons to say that it was, fundamentally an issue of race, when indeed and in fact the entire country seemed to have been divided by and large along racial lines. And we see this in the reactions of different people, not only to the verdict, but in the sorts of communities that supported Zimmerman on the one hand and Trayvon Martin on the other. We see this, yeah.
We should mention, and a listener called to remind me that we have not said, in case you just woke up, that the verdict was not guilty. It came back at about 10 o'clock last night. And thank you to the listener who reminded us that we should remind you of that. The verdict was not guilty. George Zimmerman off the hook for the second-degree murder and manslaughter of Miami Gardens teen Trayvon Martin. Now, Professor, you know the history of South Florida, and I think we were all on edge, but I don't know if we realized or we thought about exactly why we were all on edge, or if there was a real possibility of something happening in the aftermath of this verdict. I think the idea, at least from my perspective and having been here for a very long time, over 20 years, is that we've really grown up as a community, and that we're not back in the Arthur McDuffie days back in 1980 when there was a black man who was chased off his motorcycle and shot and killed, and which caused the riots of 1980, a very tumultuous year here. I don't think that we're there anymore. Does the reaction and the fact that it happened on a Saturday night, that people may have been out partying and heard this and had some free time, and we haven't seen any substantial reaction, does that surprise you that everything has been peaceful up till now?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. First of all, you know, I think racial attitudes are also, you know, there are different black communities in South Florida, and I think persons have different interest invested in the history of race relations here. You know, there are very, very many immigrants. But at the same time, you know, when one looked at the history of this case and the history of particularly black civil rights mobilization in this case. There was not violence. You know, there were protests. And consequently, I'm not sure why it is that there was an anticipation of violence here. You know, black men are convicted every day here, and white persons who are acquitted for, you know, acts against black people, and there's not particularly over the past 20 years a recent history of violent retaliation by groups. You know, what I was afraid of, and I haven't heard anyone said this, that if you were considered guilty, you know, if you were found guilty of either second degree or if you were considered guilty of manslaughter, that there were particular groups that supported Zimmerman, you know, particular white right-wing conservative groups that might have produced particular reactions that were not necessarily going to be helpful.
Hmm. Professor,
that was my particular concern.
Professor Pertzi Hinson, sociology professor at Florida International University, thanks for waking up early with us on this Saturday morning to bring some perspective to all this. It was really appreciated.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much. And we'll wrap it up by hearing some more of our listeners here. We hope this program has been a public service to you early on this Sunday morning, and we'll continue to bring you coverage in the aftermath of the verdict with WLRN Miami Herald News throughout the next few days. And we have our reporters on the scene. But obviously most important is to hear from you folks. Thomas is in Miami and was here during the riots in 1980. Thomas, welcome to the special program. What do you have for us?
Morning, Phil. Enjoy the show. I was telling your screener, I'm a Miami native. I've been here all my life, and I remember all the tumult we went through in the 80s and even back to 68. And, I think we've grown up. We've matured enough that hopefully, you know, we're not going to have any problems, because I can remember I could see, you know, the smoke from the warehouses off of my balcony, and it was like a scary thing. I just graduated from Miami-Dade, and everything was like very peace and kumbaya.
So Thomas, do you think too much has been made of this, trying to manufacture something that may not have happened?
The sociology professor, I'm a graduate of FIU and took sociology courses out there, and he brought up a good point saying about, you know, there could have been a reaction from right-wing white conservative groups, but I kind of think it's almost like a slap in the black community's face to just that the media just automatically, there's always that little undercurrent of, you know, I hope they're not going to take to the streets. I hope it's going to be peace. I mean, it could have gone the other way, too. I mean, we got a lot of, you know, with the NRA people and the Tea Party. I mean, it could have gone the other way, too, if they found him guilty.
Thomas, thanks so much for your call. I want to get a couple of people in before we have to wrap it up. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, Phil. Have a good one.
Marion in Miami, welcome to our special program. Hi, Marion.
Hi.
Quickly, if you don't mind, I'm sorry, we have to wrap it up.
Just really thank you for this program. I resonated with what was said earlier. I was a student of clinical social work at New York University 20 years ago. And I was a very liberal student body, and we had to take a course called Ethnocultural Issues, which helped us very liberal-thinking people uncover some of our racial biases that just came from education and environment. And so my recommendation is for anybody in law enforcement is that they also, if they don't, even more so, undergo a course like that, so they understand what feelings and emotions and physical reactions come up for them when they are in what might be a racial profiling situation, so that they can check themselves and have resources that they've developed through their education how to cope better in a situation like that.
Very well said, Marion. Thanks very much for your call. We'll leave the final word on this hour-long special to Chris in Key West. Chris, quickly, if you could give us your summation.
Yeah, Phil, thanks for your program. Yeah, I just think this is pretty typical of Florida. I've lived here for about 10 or 12 years, and the farther north you go in Florida, the farther south you go, so to speak. It seems like a fairly racist state still, and it's too bad that it was, I think, an all-white jury pretty much, and all women.
It was five, and I think one was non-white, black, or Hispanic.
Yeah, which would tend to be scared by a larger black man.
Well, Chris,
even if he's young,
we could probably continue this conversation another hour, but we don't have it this morning.
Yep,
I do continue to listen in Key West, and we thank you for listening and calling this morning.
Yeah, very good day.
All right, now this has been a special program here on WLRN. Stay tuned. The conversation continues on our website at WLRN.org, also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks to Paul Leary. Real big thanks to Paul for coming in this morning and helping us out on this special day as our technical supervisor. And Ariana Prothero for helping us produce this program. All the other folks that have been on standby all weekend, our editor Terrence Shepherd, and Kelly Mitchell was here yesterday. Thanks to all of our staff, those I forgot. We'll be back on the air tomorrow morning with more reaction. Thanks for listening to this special program, After the Verdict. I'm Phil Latzman.